So the act of taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I'm sure is very familiar for many of you. It might be brand new for some of you. It might be something that you want to experiment with. So I'll just talk through some of the layers of what that is. Taking refuge is an act of giving over, looking at something, belonging to something larger than ourselves, setting our cares and our worries down into a trust larger than ourselves. Classically, people take refuge, it's called, in the triple gem, the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. And it is a simple ritual that is inviting you into belonging, inviting you into belonging to yourself, to each other, and to the universe, to the world. Historically, there's layers of taking refuge to the Buddha, in the Buddha. We can look to the historical Buddha, the man, Siddhartha, who lived and taught over 2,500 years ago in North India, who, through very dedicated practice, fully awakened, and dedicated 40 years of his life to teaching. Some people find that very inspiring, to take refuge in the historical Buddha. And then there's another layer, which is taking refuge in the possibility, the potentiality for awakening that lives in each one of us, in each heart, each mind. Taking refuge in that possibility, that trust. And then there's the simplest layer, which is taking refuge in each moment of lucid awareness, each moment, little tiny moment of awakening to what is now. The Buddha said, be an island unto yourself, to take refuge in that presence. As Bob was saying, remembering that you're not mindful means you're mindful. Appreciating each moment of awareness and really sinking into it is one way to take refuge in the Buddha. Taking refuge in the Dhamma, also has layers to it. There's taking refuge, of course, in the power, the wisdom, the beauty of the teachings that have been handed down warm hand to warm hand for millennia. That in itself is inspiring. There's also taking refuge in the unfolding of the practice. The fact, the beautiful possibility that this practice changes us. It reconditions the heart, the mind, even the body into being present, more aligned with truth, more aligned with integrity. All of that, taking refuge in the unfolding of the practice, the organic movement towards freedom that ripples within every moment, every breath, every moment of awareness. And then another meaning of the word Dharma that some people find inspiring to take refuge in is the way things are, the natural unfolding of the world, of life as it unfolds through us, of all the myriad conditions that brought this particular collection of people to this room tonight. So any of those layers that work for you, you can take refuge in. And then finally, there's taking refuge in Sangha. And the classic meaning of this is the Buddha's fourfold Sangha of monastics and lay people, that's us, lay people, all of the genders, but followed the Buddha in his lifetime and formed a community that persisted through the generations all the way to now. The carriers of the teachings, the carriers of the practice. There's also taking refuge in our own communities of practice, our own sanghas, wherever you came from, the community that supported you in your practice, and the community here. Bob had us look around. This is our sangha for this week, right? And sangha is also a container for inviting a sense of belonging, no matter what kind of sense of being left out or on the margins or unseen or scared. Whatever forms of separation there have been, the invitation of sangha on this retreat is to enfold yourself in the belonging, the common purpose that brings people here to practice together. And then the last layer of sangha is the sangha of all beings, the interconnected web of life in which all of us live, breathe, practice. So, please take whatever resonates for you in those different layers of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And if it feels right, take refuge in that as we chant together. And if you're new to this and the chanting doesn't feel quite right, you can hum along or you can just listen. Okay? So we'll do this call and response. And I'll do it line by line. But first, I'm going to read the English so that you know what you're chanting. It's not mysterious for those of you new. We're going to chant in the ancient language of Pali. And Buddham Saranam Gacchami. And then it goes Dhammam and Sangham. And it simply means I go to the Buddha for refuge. I go to the Dharma for refuge. I go to the Sangha for refuge. And I'll say just a word or two about the Pali. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha is understandable even when we're chanting. Gacchami literally means to walk to your refuge. And Saranang is refuge. It has the connotation of shelter, safety. So we're walking to the safety of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha for the duration of this retreat. At the beginning, we're going to do an homage, which simply says, homage to the Blessed One, the Perfected One, the Fully Enlightened One. Sorry, different English than I'm used to. So that's where we'll start. And then we'll go right into a call and response. Okay. Namo tassa.
Namo tassa.
Bhagavato arahato.
Bhagavato arahato.
Samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa.
Namo tassa.
Bhagavato arahato.
Bhagavato arahato.
Samma sambuddhassa.
Samma sambuddhassa.
Namo tassa. Bhagavato arahato.
Bhagavato arahato.
Samma sambuddhassa.
Samma sambuddhassa.
Buddham saranam gacchami.
Buddham saranam gacchami.
Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Thank you. Now Bob's going to say a few words about the precepts.
Okay. Beautiful. I love, Thich Nhat Hanh's sometimes definition, calling them the five beautiful trainings of living virtuously, living with harmony. In Sanskrit, there's a beautiful word called ahimsa, the practices of non-harming that are the foundation by which compassion and wisdom grows through living virtuously. So it's a tradition as well, starting a Vipassana insight meditation retreat. And Vipassana is the Pali word, and V is extraordinary, if you will, and Passana is to see, and bringing it together, it often rendered as insight meditation. And the foundation, again, for all wisdom is the cultivation of virtuous living, of not harming oneself or another. That's why, again, I think Thich Nhat Hanh likes to call these beautiful trainings. The first one is that I undertake the training of not killing any living being. The literal translation is to not take away any being's breath. Panatipata. So that's a very powerful translation, not to take away any being's breath. And this is pointing to that within the Dharma that all of life is sacred, is precious, not to take away life. So of course, as we undertake this training here today and for this retreat, we can have some relief that we're undertaking the training for my benefit and the benefit of all living beings. I'm not going to be killing. So we can feel safe here. All right, we're all in agreement. We're not going to kill each other. Actually, if the whole world would just take this on, that'd be very nice. Particularly in this time, I just want to just acknowledge just the devastation that's happening. And of course, it's not really a new thing. It's been going on for a long time, but these days are really intense. So I want to just name that and acknowledge that. So I'm undertaking this training of not killing that promotes a sense of safety, reverence for all of life. Actually, let's take this off. The second training. Second training is for my benefit and the benefit of all living beings, I undertake this training of not taking that which is not given, not to steal. This really helps promote the sense of trustworthiness. And this kind of like we can leave our shoes and most likely we will find them when we go downstairs. Though sometimes people have the exact same shoes and like, oh, this is my shoes, and walk off and it's actually not theirs. But I trust sooner or later it will get sorted out. But it's that sense of I undertake this training of not taking that which is not given. That's promoting the sense of trustworthiness, beautiful quality, safety and trustworthiness. The third practice is that I undertake the training of causing no harm with my sexuality. Being that we are on retreat here together, perhaps it's even more appropriate to say that during this week we will practice celibacy in the sense of really supporting one another to have a very respectful type of space that we can practice together. Causing no harm with our sexuality is something that we can bring into our lives as lay people, but for here, perhaps practicing just with that intention to be celibate for this time. So it's offering the sense of respect, because, you know, of course, I think many of us understand this is a very powerful energy, and how do we honor it and acknowledge it and also respect each other with this to support one another to practice and to deepen. The fourth training is to not harm with our speech. Speech that often we'll say is honest and kind and useful, beneficial and timely. To not harm with speech, with ways of slighting someone or hurting feelings or shaming or aggression. There's many different aspects of speech that also can cause a lot of pain. Speech is powerful, another powerful force. It can bring us together. It can separate us. It can bring peace. It can bring war. So I undertake this training of not harming with our speech, but in this particular retreat, we're really wanting to adopt the practices of noble silence. And I really want you to understand it's not like we are silencing you. That's a big difference. I remember once talking with a meditator that had a very difficult, painful experience where one of her parents didn't speak with her for a year. She was silenced. And so the coming into the retreat and practicing noble silence was, of course, very triggering. And so we want to really be very explicit. This is not like you're being silenced. We understand the silence in another way, that it supports us to go deeper into practice, honoring the silence so that we can honor each other. That brings a sense of safety, respect, trustworthiness, and so forth with each other. So in this retreat, we'll be practicing noble silence, except for the times if there's something that you have, if in the kitchen there's something like a person's about to put their hand on a hot pot, it's fine to say hot. Or during our Q&A time, after the instructions each day, there's an opportunity to ask a question, or during the practice discussion. So other than that, we're practicing noble silence. And again, it's offered as a way to support, as an ally, to help support us to deepen our practice. Another few kind of aspects of this noble silence is that we'd like to request that you not read anything, or write, or take pictures, or paint, or all these different mediums that actually could be, in their own right, very beneficial and powerful at certain times for us in our lives, not to negate any of these. But, you know, what would it be like for this time to have the sense of the silence, and rather than reading a book or writing a haiku or whatever, to just stay in our own direct experience? Again, it's not offered as a punishment but as an opportunity, as an ally. Like, that could be kind of interesting. What's this like to just be within my own direct experience? Continuing that theme, some of us here may not only appreciate the silence and not using the computer or the cell phone. Again, if you need help with, you can't control the cell phone, please let one of the managers know and they will hold it for you. Realize some of you may need the cell phone to set your timer and for the alarm clock, and that's fine. And what you might want to follow your urge. Well, maybe just like a little bit, just check here this, but just watch that urge. And rather than do it, like feel the urge. What's being longed for here? Learn about your own mind and heart and not do it, if at all possible. And if you need help, yes, bring the phone to the manager. They will help. I think there's extra alarm clocks here. They'll be so, or there's bells that ring beforehand. So you'll find other ways to know about the timing of things. And then there's the practice of minimal eye contact. And this is that you don't have to feel obligated to have to look at someone in the eyes, and that you have your own space just to be in your own direct experience. And I know that for some of us, this is so unsocial, like not talking to someone, not looking at anyone, like this kind of like the Night of the Living Dead. But, you know, give it a try. And if there is some like deep longing, like no one's looking at me and I'm feeling, sometimes this can be also triggering. Come and see us. We will make a connection. And again, it's just really supporting each other to have that solitude of practice, of the silence, the minimal eye contact without reading and writing and arithmetic and everything else. For those of us that are introverts, this is sounding better and better and better. I don't have to see anyone. I don't have to talk to anyone. It's like, and those of us that are extroverts, like, OMG, WTF, what am I going to do? And so, you know, and some of us, of course, have these different qualities of extroversion, introversion. So easy does it. Easy does it. And really want to invite you for that, like, scientist inside to be curious. Investigate. Like, oh, what's this like to not be speaking and not to have eye contact? And if, you know, you're walking by and you all of a sudden have eye contact with someone, you're not like breaking the meditation law here. Like, enjoy the moment. There was a connection and let it go. But if a person doesn't look back at you, we might have this whole personal story come up. I'm starting to take it personally. This person doesn't like me and this and that. But that's, of course, the construction of our own mind. And so we might want to, oh, wait a minute, look at this, here I am. This is familiar, this story. So all of this can be very useful aspects of practice. So the noble silencing, so we can deepen to see more clearly what's here in our own mind and body and heart. And the last training is a training of really focusing on clarity, seeing clearly into the nature of things. And so I undertake the training for my benefit, the benefit of all living beings. I undertake this training of not using any intoxicants that may cloud the mind in a way that I can't see more clearly. There's middle paths of things. Unfortunately, some of you will see coffee served in the morning and tea, and you know that we can have our list of what's intoxicating or not. I mean, even food is intoxicating. Seeing the redwoods could be intoxicating. Wow, I'm just so. But we're speaking about alcohol, drugs. It was interesting. I was just teaching this retreat in Portugal, and it was at a Jesuit retreat center, old monastery, and they had like bottles of wine on all the table, and I had to say to the priest, well, you know, maybe you could put those away during the retreat. But when in Portugal, no, we put them away. And so it's interesting. I just want to honor the different cultural understandings. But in here, we're really abstaining, if you will, from using any intoxicants so that we can, and again, it's that invitation of seeing clearly. So, you know, this is the old days, you'd have that manual focus. We can focus to get more clear seeing into things. So this is an ally this clarity, for now to abstain from taking any intoxicants or drugs that may cloud our mind. Of course, some of us have medications that we're using, and by all means do continue taking your medications. So these are the five beautiful trainings, the five qualities, the foundation by which wisdom can grow. And if you look at a triangle, the base is the widest and it's supporting structure that helps hold up the rest. And so you can consider almost like that base, that foundation is the practices of virtue that help us to feel safe and trustworthy and clear-headed and so forth. And when we're living virtuously, it helps our minds on a very practical note to help settle. Because if we're doing things in such a way that later we have some remorse or shame or guilt or a lot of confusion, it's very difficult to help settle our minds. So that sense of living virtuously, it might bring you a sense of inner happiness. I'm not causing any pain to myself or to others as best I can. And I think that's an important thing to say, as best I can. Human skin, 1 square inch lives 32 million bacteria. And so it's hard not to cause any harm whatsoever to any being, but we're doing the best that we can. And so we follow these five precepts in this way of causing the least harm possible without killing living beings at all possible and without stealing, without causing harm with our sexuality. The practices of noble silence, not harming with speech. And the clarity of the mind with not taking any intoxicants that helps support that sense of more stability. So again, that foundation of virtuous living helps us to feel settled. That supports us to begin to gather, collect, to steady our minds, to develop our concentration. And then with those together, that could potentially help support the growth of insight, of clear seeing into things. Perhaps recognizing some stories that I've identified with, and now I'm like, oh, here's this conditioning, here's this story, and then seeing it in another way that brings deeper understanding and perhaps less sense of being so constricted by it because I understand it or whatever, as far as insight. So we know enough that by living virtuously and helping to steady the mind, this is supportive for the germination of insight. So just taking a moment and just, I'm going to repeat these, and I won't do a call and response for now, but just to take a moment as I recite these five beautiful trainings, just to taking that in for my benefit and the benefit of all living beings, I undertake the trainings of not killing, of not harming. So just take a moment to take that in. To rest in some safety. This feels safe. And for my training and my benefit and the benefit of all living beings, I undertake the training of not taking that which is not given. So just resting into that for a moment, like the sense of trustworthiness. And this third training, for my benefit and the benefit of all living beings, I undertake the training of not causing harm with my sexuality. But in this case, since we're here together practicing celibacy, this is, of course, physical and as best as we can on an energetic level, that sense of deep respectfulness, of feeling into that, like respectfulness with each other, like sisters and brothers together here supporting each other. Or those that don't identify as spirits and brothers, want to honor all beings And for my benefit and the benefit of all living beings, I undertake the training of not harming with our speech, but in this case, we're moving into noble silence that reflects not only with our voice, but with minimal eye contact, with the not with reading and writing and all those types of things, painting, photographing. So this helps to support the sense of deepening into practice. So taking that in, it brings together these qualities of safety and trustworthiness and respect. And then lastly, for my benefit and the benefit of all living beings, I undertake this training of clarity, of seeing clearly into the nature of things, of not using any intoxicants. So taking that in, that sense of clarity, clear seeing, that brings together wisdom and compassion as one unified way. And so thank you for our benefit and the benefit of all beings. We practice these qualities of ahimsa, of non-harming. And so thank you. And I'm going to be passing on to Yasmina now, that's going to offer some movement with us, and very good. Thank you.
And so, beginning by reaching your hands out in front of you, both hands, I'm going to have to use one hand here, and then inhale, bringing both hands in together, breathing in, and then back out, and in, and out. In, reaching up and out all the way down, and then you're going to take a deep breath in, bringing your shoulders up, exhale back and down, inhale, shrug them down again. And one more. If it's possible for you, turn your body just a little bit this way. So, I don't want any feet going towards the Buddha. And then reach your right foot out and just rotate your right ankle. Rotate the right foot to the right. And then the right foot to the left. The left foot. You can have the other one bent in. And the left foot to the left. And the right foot to the right. And then in whatever way feels comfortable for you, gather yourself back to the kind of center point. And something that I didn't say, but I would like to say, is anytime we're doing anything with the body, people's bodies are different. There may be people that don't have a right foot or a left foot, or they don't have mobility in it, or it it causes excruciating pain. So anything that we do around mindful movement, I invite you to really listen inside your own body and do anything that's going to feel supportive, and anything that you're unsure about, or especially if there's fear arising, then maybe not. And if you have a question, you can write me a note. And I want to say a little bit more, which is that, you know, like when you're stretching. So let's do a little stretch. We'll end here. Just stretch out one foot and let the other one be bent. And just lean forward just a little bit. And lean just right till you feel kind of in your heart, you're kind of going, oh yeah, I can feel that, right? But don't lean so far that your mind goes, ooh, ooh, ooh. You know what I mean? Yeah, just right there, just like, oh yeah. Yeah, and just kind of hang out there. And through the course of our week together, the place will change, right? We get a little more flexible from practicing every day. And the other foot. So right to the ooh and not to the ah, ah, ah. Okay, so just lean in. There. And that's enough for today. Thank you. Oh, I forgot one last thing, which is, there may be people in the room that have disabilities that we couldn't see them. I have one. And sometimes the standing posture is a posture that I may take. Lying down, sitting, standing. So listen to your body throughout the whole week. Thank you.
Thank you, Yasmina. And so we'd like to close this opening evening, these last 10 minutes, with a little bit of a meditation. And so please find a posture that is comfortable, but also has some alertness to it, whatever you may have at this time of the day. And maybe honor the journey that you've been on today, or maybe longer, to get yourself here. I know for many of us, it's been quite a day. A lot of preparation, getting things ready, the travel, settling in here, seeing people and figuring it out. Just kind of honor everything it took to get yourself here. And maybe some gratitude for this effort, this push to get yourself here in this seat at this retreat. Maybe recalling your intention for being here. Maybe what you spoke earlier today, or something else that feels alive and present for you now. Just feel into that. And being aware of this community that we're forming. Community of good intention, good hearts, a container of safety, protecting ourselves, protecting each other, And allow yourself to sort of relax into that. Know that this is a safe container that we are co-creating. And perhaps there's some tension, some holding that can be released. That armoring that we have in the world, day to day. Maybe that can be loosened a bit, put down. If it works for you, you might take 2 or 3 nice deep breaths, breathing in as full as is comfortable for you. And on the exhale, just releasing, letting go. Maybe a couple more breaths, just enjoying the enlivening, embodying aspect of breathing. Giving yourself a breath massage, expanding the chest. As it breathing in, and letting the shoulders and the body kind of drop, relax on the exhale. And remembering this breath, this mindfulness of breath is always available. As soon as you bring it up, it's there and available to you. So just allowing the body to relax. Letting the scalp and forehead soften. Letting the jaw relax. The eyes can be soft in their sockets. The throat is open. And allow the neck to be upright but relaxed. And dropping the shoulders, letting the arms hang, release. And softening the hands. Relaxing the rib cage, the shoulder blades. Relaxing the pelvis, upper legs, the knees. The shins and the calves, the ankles and feet, and all the way to the ends of your toes. Allowing the mind to settle. And to quiet a little bit. And just allowing yourself to rest. Allow the body and mind to be eased and relaxed. And allowing the mind to rest in awareness, just being here. Present, open.